Welcome to Locked On Grizzlies. My name is Peter Edmiston. What an incredible weekend it's been. Maybe not so much for the Grizzlies, but certainly around the NBA. Earth-shattering stuff. But damn it, this is a Grizzlies pod. This is not a full league-wide pod. So we'll talk about the LeBron stuff and, my God, what a cast of characters he's surrounded himself with. But really, we're going to talk about it in the framework of the Grizzlies, because the Grizzlies did make a move in free agency. They did something. It wasn't much. Don't start printing up the championship banners just yet. Save those t-shirts. Get the parade route ready for, I don't know, sometime, long time in the future. But they did do something. Omri Caspi is going to be a Memphis Grizzly. Signed for a one-year veteran minimum contract. That'll be around $2.2 million for somebody of his experience level. The contract is fully guaranteed. And, you know, it's a guy. It's a guy that can do some stuff. So that's pretty much all I can tell you in terms of excitement. Now, you look around the rest of the league, you see the signings. It was a bumper crop of signings right out of the gate last night. Like, boom, clock struck midnight Eastern time, and everybody had already committed. An incredible job in that 5 to 10 minutes after midnight for all those agents. I'm sure that was the only time that they spoke to any of those players. And so amid all of that, the Grizzlies came to an agreement with Omri Caspi. Now let's talk a little bit about Caspi and the role that you would see for him before we talk about the future and all that stuff. It's coming. But to start with Caspi, you know, Caspi's on a one-year deal. And, you know, like most Grizzlies, he's hurt, or coming off injuries at least. That's sort of a prerequisite for signing with the Grizzlies these days. But the difference with him and some of the other Grizzlies, Chandler Parsons, is his stuff is not really thought to be chronic or necessarily all linked or super problematic or, you know, anything like that. It's more of a freak stuff than anything else. You know, he had the thumb injury back two seasons ago, right after he was traded to the Pelicans as part of the Boogie trade, I guess, at that time. And so he ends up going over there as part of that deal and immediately breaks his thumb. Sucks for him big time. And so he was out there, ends up signing with Minnesota for a little bit, signs with the Warriors last offseason. And, you know, had a season full of injury again, you know, where he twisted his ankle coming down, like in February, I think it was last year, and, you know, missed a bunch of time, had some back issues, hip issues as well. And the season was kind of never really fully healthy, didn't play a ton of minutes, but was still, you know, playing key minutes here and there, did fill in for, you know, started a couple games for Draymond Green when he was out. You know, he did some things and would have certainly been part of their postseason roster, but for his injury concerns. He was left off the postseason roster so that the Warriors could go with Quinn Cook instead. Cook did play some key minutes for the Warriors, and I think you all know what happened at the end of the whole deal. Warriors are pretty good. So, that being said, Caspi was looking for somewhere else to play, and the Grizzlies stepped up with a decent offer, and here you go. Watching Caspi over the last few seasons, a few things stand out. Number one, he's a good shooter, but he's probably not as much of a knockdown shooter as you might think he is. Some people have the reputation, I guess, that sort of precedes them a little bit. His is a little overblown. He's a good shooter, very solid shooter, but certainly not in the Kyle Korver category or somebody like that. That's just an absolute deadeye, not a Klay Thompson. You know, not even in Joe Harris's category in terms of, you know, the production over the last couple of years, or Seth Curry for that matter. He's a career 37% three-point shooter, three seasons where he's gone over 40%, including last year. But last year it was interesting because the way that Golden State used him, you know, surrounded by so many shooters, he ended up being more of a cutter. He cuts the basket a lot, got a lot of open looks at the rim. 30% of his offense, according to Synergy, came via cuts. Only 10% of his shots were from behind the three-point line, when that mark for his career is 36%. So he really turned into a much more of a cutter specialist type guy, rather than a shooter, and certainly wasn't much of a spot-up shooter for Golden State. Probably will play more of that role for the Grizzlies, but you could see how his cutting would come in handy. And you could see the Grizzlies do like to move. You've got Marc Gasol, who can certainly pass the ball. Mike Conley, who could certainly pass the ball. If they are interested in ball movement, they are interested in player movement, so that stuff will come in handy. And Caspi will fill that role pretty well. Caspi's minutes, I think, you know, just kind of looking ahead and figuring out what he can do, because he actually defended pretty well last year. He's been, from what I've gone back and watched several of his seasons and, you know, bits and pieces to kind of get a feel for how he's developed over the years. Because, you know, you remember some things, but you gotta go back and actually watch. So, watching him defensively, he's not a bad defender, actually. He's not a great defender, but he's not as bad as I initially would have pegged him. He's okay. He can do some things. He can defend in space. Good size, 6'9", 230 or so. Bigger when you watch him. You know, he's certainly not quick, but that size, he's one of those guys that it's a little bit like Andrew Harrison, where you can leverage that size to your advantage and use it to be physical and make it tough defensively on your opponent. So that's kind of what he's done. He did a pretty good job last year dealing with cutters, guys that were, you know, moving pretty quickly. I would have thought he would have had a difficult time with them, but he actually handled it pretty well, all things considered. So the role that he would play for the Grizzlies, in my mind, is kind of that 3-4, that supersized 3 role that we saw Jarrell Martin end up playing so much. I think you'll see those minutes go to Caspi, and he'll upgrade those minutes tremendously. And, playing a fair bit of 3, good bit of 4, and he'll be all over the place. I think the Grizzlies are, you know, from everything that I've had a chance to speak to J.B. Bickerstaff and the players about thus far in the mini camp and kind of just, you know, sort of doing a little bit of early prep work for the season, they really are emphasizing the idea of being somewhat positionless. I mean, you're obviously going to have guys out there, you know, in certain roles for sure, but it's not going to be the strict, you know, positional basketball that you're going to see. You'll see some guys, you know, float around, and they've got players that can do that. They've a couple guys that are pretty much locked into their spots, you know, Mike and Mark, 1 and 5, but 2, 3, and 4 can kind of go a little squishy for the Grizzlies, which will work out well for Caspi, because I think he can play the 3-4 part of that pretty intermittently, and he can kind of go in between without too much difficulty. That does, to me, speak and spell difficulty for Jarrell Martin, though. I can't see Jarrell. I mean, I think he was already going to have some difficulty, you know, being as old as he is comparatively, having gone through whatever development he's gone through. Was a little bit better last year, but certainly is not a guy that's necessarily distinguished himself in any major way. Well, now you add Jaren Jackson Jr. as a, you know, lauded and certainly a big in need of development. Well, that's going to jump him ahead of Jarrell Martin. You've obviously got Ivan Rabb, who has probably, in terms of being a specialist and being young, probably has a little bit of an edge just from a guy that you'd want to see get some time and get some work in over Jarrell. Now, Caspi, from just purely a minute standpoint, does a lot of the things that Jarrell tried to do last year, does them better than Jarrell. So, and kind of as an administrative sort of thing, from a roster standpoint, the Grizzlies now with the signing of Caspi, assuming, and they did announce the signing of Jaren Jackson Jr. to his rookie scale contract, presumably at the normal amount, that would be a 4-year, $30-ish million deal, starting around $5.9 million in year one. That's the rookie scale at 120%, which almost every case of the rookie signing, that's what rookies get. So with that signing in the books, Javon Carter will be signed. They won't do it immediately, because to sign him to longer than a 2-year deal, which they want to do, that would necessitate using part of their mid-level exception, but they're still working through that. And if obviously they got a full mid-level of a high enough priority, they might bump down Carter's signing. So they're just going to wait and see, but he will be signed. You add Caspi, Jackson, Carter. That puts the Grizzlies at 15 right now on the roster. Now, they obviously don't have any issue carrying more than that. You can carry up to 20 in the offseason without penalty. So it's not, you can certainly sign more, but they're going to have to trim that down to 15. And all those contracts are guaranteed fully, except for Wayne Selden and Andrew Harrison, who have partial guarantees. And you would think that Selden and Anderson, or Selden and Harrison, rather, Wayne Selden and Andrew Harrison both will make the team in all likelihood. So those would be guaranteed. Andrew Harrison's isn't guaranteed until January 10th of this upcoming season. So you could maybe still, he could still make the team and, maybe something would happen before January 10th if money got really, really tight or roster spots got really, really tight. But I bring that up because you add up the fact they got 15 guys. 15 is the max. If you sign anyone, you're going to eventually have to cut somebody. But that means cutting guaranteed money. You can stretch it. So, you know, that would, you know, reduce the penalty this season. But still, the money starts to get a little crazy. And when you look at where they are right now, and if you add a full mid-level in whatever form that's distributed, that puts them right around $121, $122 million with the cap, or with the luxury tax line, rather, coming in at 123.7. So you add some extra guys, or at least one extra guy, you're going to have to cut somebody. That money will add on to that. So you can see where the stretch might be something they'll think about. Maybe a trade, a two-for-one type situation as well. There are plenty of options. It's certainly not something that they would need to necessarily panic about. It's certainly not something that they would need to freak out about or make any major changes yet. But go back a year. Remember what happened in the 2017 preseason when the Grizzlies ended up having to cut guaranteed money? They had to cut Wade Baldwin. And, I mean, not only guaranteed money, but a guy that was the 17th pick in the draft. And Roddy Zagorat's a guy that they, for whatever reason, decided to give a three-year guaranteed contract to, who's got 2 years left on the books. Yeah, that happened. That was just a year ago. So that stuff, you know, can come back and get you. And that's, you know, these are not huge contracts, but they are getting up to the level where even very small contracts can bump them closer to the tax line than they want to be. And I can promise you the Grizzlies will not pay tax, especially for this team. And you know, we'll talk about why after the break. Not that you even really, I mean, when I say we'll talk about why, you know why. You know why. They're not going to pay tax on a team like this. This is not a team that's going to be they may not be a playoff team. They're certainly not going to win the championship. You don't necessarily want to be Oklahoma City. And while it's a great accomplishment for Oklahoma City and a real boon for small markets everywhere that they kept Paul George, somehow Paul George did not want to go join LeBron in LA. The fact that they kept him and with their current contracts and they handed Jeremy Grant a big old contract on top of that, all of that combined means that they are looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $130+ million in tax on top of a payroll that's already over $150 million. So depending on estimates and how it goes, they could be paying in the neighborhood of $300 million in total for that team, which are they even going to get out of the first round? They'll make the playoffs, but are they going to get out of the first round? I know they didn't have Andre Robertson. I hope like hell he's, you know, LeBron and Tony Allen and Kyrie and everybody wrapped up into one to get that team going in what is now an incredibly brutal West. And that's my point. You have Oklahoma City that kept Paul George. You have Houston that kept Chris Paul. So though they lost Trevor Ariza to the Suns, they're still going to be extremely good. No question about that. You have Phoenix that now all of a sudden looks interesting at the very least. I'm not sure that they're going to be a playoff team, but they at least look interesting. You have Utah that continues to be very, very good and very young. No reason to expect that they won't be extremely good. Denver, not only keeps Nikola Jokic, but they keep Will Barton as well. That was a 46-win team last year. That's still quite young, you would think, and didn't have Paul Millsap for most of the year. You'd think they'd be better. This year, Minnesota continues to have a young core that's really, really good. The Spurs, I have no idea what the Spurs are going to look like at this point, but, you know, given Pop and the fact that they're at least bringing back the vets, they're probably going to be competent at the very least. You have, well, quite honestly, I don't know what Dallas is going to be, but I think they're going to be a hell of a lot better when you add DeAndre Jordan on a one-year deal to just catch lobs from Luka Doncic. Really a perfect scenario. A lot of talent, that a lot of it's young and unproven, but I think they'll at least be feisty at the very least. Then you get to Portland. I don't know what the hell's going on with Portland. And, of course, to top it all off, the Lakers adding LeBron and JaVale and Lance. I don't know. it got a little weird. But the big thing is they got LeBron. They may add more. They may get Kawhi. I don't know. But they added LeBron, and LeBron is an instant trip to the playoffs with that group. No question about it. What the hell did the Grizzlies do at this point? And I've asked this question on my Twitter, at Peter Edmiston, and I'll ask you now. What do the Grizzlies do? The scenario, you know what the scenario is. The Grizzlies right now do not have their 2019 pick. It goes to Boston, except in the case the Grizzlies finishing 1-8 in the draft order. Goes to 1-6 in 2020, is unprotected in 2021. So that is a big prohibitor in terms of pure ass tanking. You can't just forget about it and go balls to the wall on the tank, because you got to deal with that pick at some point. Now, I guess you could try to really be cute and tank big time this year, trade off whatever you can trade off, let the young guys go crazy, lose a bunch of games, make sure you finish as one of the four worst teams, because now with the new lottery rules, you can drop four spots instead of three. So you'd have to make sure that you finish in the bottom four in order to ensure that you would keep that pick. And if you could do that, get not a great draft, but yeah, the draft always kicks out guys. So you can get somebody in the draft, maybe try it again, even more difficult to do in 2020 because you got to be one of the worst two teams in the league to make sure you keep the pick then. But if you could somehow do that, a double tank, that would have been three straight years of tanking, FYI, which your fans would probably be unbelievably pissed off. But let's say you do that. If you play your cards right, maybe by 2021, you can really like be blasting and off the charts with great young talent. And then you can go and give that unprotected pick in that 2021 draft class. Maybe that becomes not so bad. Maybe you can be pretty good and you give up a, you know, late lottery or even a low playoff type pick, mid-teens pick to the Celtics at that point. Now, there are obviously a million problems with all those scenarios. Number one, how are you going to tank this year? Even if you want to tank, you're going to have to send Mark and Mike home again. You're going to have some injury situation come up. I mean, it's possible, certainly. You're going to have to find a trade for those guys. I think the ship has sailed on a Marc Gasol trade altogether. Mike Conley, maybe, but the league has got plenty of good point guards. And at that position, paid that kind of money, I think it's very hard to find too many suitors that would need Mike Conley's services. Very difficult to construct trades. You obviously have Chandler Parsons just hanging around there, and that contract is a mess. It's difficult to envision how you can make those trades in order to facilitate something of a tank. As long as those guys are on your team, you're going to be too good to tank, and to tank as hard as you're going to need to make sure you keep your pick. The other issue, of course, is that 2021 draft is probably going to be a really, really loaded draft. And as long as you've got the opportunity to be in that draft, because remember, that's the year when, it, in all likelihood, the one-and-done rule will be lifted, which means that draft will contain both the one-and-dones from the prior year, in the last year of the one-and-done, and the incoming high school seniors who are good enough to jump into the NBA draft for the first time in a while. That should be a loaded group. You want to be in that draft. Chances are, even being in the middle to bottom of the lottery of that draft is going to be pretty good. A little bit like this year, where you could see that the top part of the draft was pretty nicely loaded. So you're going to want to be in that draft. And it's probably better, from a flexibility standpoint, just to go ahead and convey the pick to Boston, as much as it sucks. Get that thing off your books. Try to win as much as you can this year so the pick is not that good. But really, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't. There's no point in you trying to, you know, do anything extra to try to win more this year just to screw Boston over. You made the mistake. Dumbass trade. Didn't need to happen. It happened. It's over. What can you do? Chalk it up. And, you know, that's probably the way they're going to have to go. But what should they do? I asked that was the poll question. I asked, what should they do? Should they go for that little cute tank approach, double tank, and, you know, just be like, look, screw it. The West is brutal. Brutal. Even if everything goes right for us, we're still probably looking at an 8 seed at best. At best. Where we get tatered by Golden State in the first round. That's the best case scenario. So screw that. Let's just tank now, tank next year, and then maybe you're good to go in 2021. Half the people say you should do that. Half the people say suck it up, be as good as you can this year, give up that pick, and see what happens after the following year. You know, I think, you know, you guys know, if you've listened to the podcast long enough, you know my feelings on it. Ultimately, I've always said, you know, that I think they should have gone into tank mode a long time ago. I think they should have traded or tried to trade Mark and Mike as early as they possibly could, and, you know, try to jumpstart this thing. Because if you look, you kind of look at the tea leaves and see how good these teams are going to be. The Grizzlies had no pathway to compete, and just look, you're looking at teams, you know, like, same thing that Philly was looking at forever, you know, and you know that's where the process comes in. I'm not saying the Grizzlies had to simulate the process, but if you want to win, particularly in a small market, a market that's not going to get major free agent signings, you've got to draft high, high, high level talent. And I think the Grizzlies could well have done that this year. I think if all works out, Jaren Jackson has a chance to be a very, very high level talent. That's the thing that you have to do. But you got to get more than one high level talent, particularly a guy like, you know, Jaren Jackson is not a LeBron. He's not going to be a one-man wrecking crew. He's not KD. You know, he's not, you got to, he's a guy that's going to be part of a championship team if you play your cards right, but he's not going to be the alpha number one dude on that team. Get somebody else around him. Well, you know, that's where, if you'd started this tank years ago, you probably could have gotten some picks of value for Mark or Mike. You probably could have gotten some young players of value. But the Grizzlies, just come hell or high water, we're not going to consider that. We're not even going to think about it. And that's gotten them to this position now where you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place. So what do you do? Honestly, I don't know. In terms of free agency, is it even worth it to go out and spend your full mid-level on whoever? I will be honest with you, it looks less and less likely that Tyreke Evans is going to be part of that mix. I think he's got enough interest from a number of really competitive teams, Warriors, Lakers, and others, that there's really, I think the chances of coming back to Memphis are pretty low at this point. So if you don't get him, you go and sign, you know, one of the other potential guys out there. Is that going to make a huge difference for you this year? I don't know. I mean, I guess you might as well, but you know, again, we're talking about now just a matter of trying to figure out a long-term strategy. And this is something they should have done years ago. They didn't do. And now this is the consequence. You find yourself stuck in the middle in a conference that is just going to be brutal for the next probably 2 to 3 years at minimum, you're looking at an even more difficult West than it's already been. And it's already been much, much tougher than the East. Now you add LeBron to the mix. You seal up Paul George to the mix. I don't know. So it's an interesting time. It's a difficult time, and I think a lot of difficult decisions being made over at FedEx Forum. And I've told you my theory on the whole thing is that they've kind of secretly started the rebuild process. I don't mean secretly, but just they've very quietly behind the scenes built the framework of a rebuild while publicly putting out the idea that you're going to try to win games. I think ultimately, you know, they'll probably go ahead and try just this year because, you know, why not? Unless you're going to tank hard, you're going to give up that pick. But I think behind the scenes, you see with the coaching staff, and I went over and watched minicamp and saw these guys work, you know, Potapenko working with the bigs, and saw Jerry Stackhouse, you know, running a lot, and Forsier, and you know, JB is giving these guys. I wrote several pieces for the Commercial Appeal, and you can read one of them. Read all of them. Read a lot because, you know, the clicks are great. But my most recent one that you can read is about, you know, Summer League starting tomorrow, which, by the way, Summer League starts tomorrow. It's crazy. And you know, some of the visualization work that JB and the coaching staff have given to the young players, like Jaren Jackson, Javon Carter, especially, it's interesting. You know, he wanted them to visualize what they could be and some of the ways that the Grizzlies wanted them to develop and use them. And he showed them videos, like he showed Chris Paul videos and Patrick Beverley videos, particularly defensively, to Javon Carter to try to get that bulldog mentality, you know, stuck in and do some of the things that they did defensively. Kevin Garnett, that was the primary video that Jaren Jackson got. Again, just some of the moves that he was making, some of the ways that he attacked both offensively and defensively. And it was an interesting thing to see those guys. They really did seem to respond to it. Now, you know, what will that say? I don't know. But I do know Jaren Jackson's been excellent in the minicamp, as you would hope from a guy that's number four pick. And you know, we'll start to see on Monday as the Grizzlies begin Utah Jazz Summer League play against Trae Young and the Hawks in the evening. It's going to be fun. It's fun to actually get, you know, like a nice 6 o'clock tip off basketball. It'll be fun to actually watch a little basketball. Summer League basketball being what it is, it's not going to be great, but it's going to be great to see these young guys out there and actually doing some stuff and really get a chance to break them down and look and see what they do and, you know, what are some of the things in a Grizzly setup that Jaren Jackson is going to do. Javon Carter, what about some of the young guys that really should be playing for their jobs? I mean, a guy like Deontay Davis, Jarrell Martin, and Martin obviously is not going to be part of Summer League, but Davis is, and Ivan Rabb will be. And those guys need to be playing for their jobs. As I mentioned earlier, it may be too late for Jarrell Martin, but it may not be too late for Deontay. I think he's on the very, very thinnest of ice, but he's got to play well. Need some development from those guys. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you've enjoyed this edition of Locked On Grizzlies. Got so much more on the way, but for now, I will say have a great start to your week. We'll talk again soon here on Locked On Grizzlies.